Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, a podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Empowering Agency Workers podcast. I'm your host, Julia Kermode, and this week, I've been thinking about all the people out there listening to this who might be applying for jobs at the moment. And in particular, because lots of people are looking for work at the moment, there are unfortunately a number of scams out there whereby dubious people are targeting job seekers with particular scams and fake jobs or fake training and basically ways to con job seekers out of money. And it is it's totally abhorrent, actually, to be honest with you, that the fact that these people are targeting potentially vulnerable people at the moment. And I do find it very, very shocking. But that is exactly why it is the focus of today's podcast. And joining me today is Keith Rosser, who is chair of Safer Jobs, which is an absolutely fantastic organisation solely dedicated to eradicating the job market of these scams. And we're going to chat about lots of things, and I really do recommend that you listen, because I want to be able to equip you to spot these scams and basically to not get caught up by them and not be exploited by them. And you know, we cover all sorts of different things about what is going on at the moment, how you might protect yourselves, how you can spot kind of a genuine job versus something that perhaps is dubious or fake or a scam. We also talk about how, if you're new to the jobs market, how can you be expected to kind of navigate this, and all sorts of stuff around it. So it is a really, really useful podcast to listen to. And a little bit about Keith Rosser. He's actually in charge of the compliance aspects across the Reed Group. So it's a very large recruitment firm, and he founded Reed Screening in 2011. So he's very, very busy within Reed, but as well as that, he chairs Safer Jobs. He's been in the recruitment sector for probably more years than he'd like me to mention, and he's received a commendation award from the Home Office for services to recruitment. So he really knows his stuff, and compliance is really important to him. So he's a great guest for this podcast. And Safer Jobs, just a little bit about that, and I will put this information on the listening notes as well on our website. But Safer Jobs has been going since 2008, and it works, it's an independent organisation, and it works with across all the different government departments, so the Department of Business, DWP, Citizens Advice Bureau, Action Fraud, Trading Standards, crime stoppers, and anyone else with an interest in the jobs market, as well as, of course, they work throughout the recruitment industry. And so they've got kind of they're covering every type of organization that this kind of might affect, and they're incredibly busy. And it's, as I say, it's an independent organization, because there are so many job-related scams at the moment. There, Keith has been very busy, not only on kind of the day job at Safer Jobs, but also getting involved in press coverage. And recent things for him have included being on BBC News, on Sky News, and also filming on Rip Off Britain. So actually, he's so busy that we're lucky he was able to fit us in. But like me, he cares about trying to stop these scammers. So it was probably a no-brainer for him to be involved in this podcast. So hopefully you are getting the sense that I think this is a really, really important episode to listen to. So without further ado, let's get started. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Keith Rosser, who is, amongst other things, Head of Compliance at Reed and also Director at Safer Jobs. Hi, Keith. Would you like to introduce yourself a bit more to our listeners?
Hello, Julia. Yeah, I'm Keith Rosser. I'm the chair of Safer Jobs, which is a charity that was founded by the Metropolitan Police to look after vulnerable workers and work seekers, which has cross-government support now. So that's my my reason, I guess, for being on this podcast. But I also, as you say, work for Reed, and I chair a number of related sort of industry organisations as well.
Yeah, actually, as we were just chatting before we got started, you are one of the world's busiest men, and people, I guess, might be a little surprised that there's all this background work going on to protect people in the jobs market. So it's really nice to kind of have this chat with you, so people can understand a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes. And I think really right now, more than ever, there are probably more people searching for jobs than ever before. Probably more of those job searchers are vulnerable than previously. And I'm just sort of thinking, job scams are not a new thing. We know that. But are the job scams out there also at an all-time high?
They are. So we know from before lockdown that there was already a high proportion of jobs online that weren't genuine. And the last employment minister quoted that 1 in 10 job seekers will have encountered a job scam at some point during their job search. But since lockdown, sadly, we've seen almost a 70% increase in the number of reports from work seekers about job scams. And that's partly because, as you say, sadly, a lot of people have lost their jobs during COVID-19. It's also about, unfortunately, fraudsters recognising opportunity, and that this scam is so technology enabled, people can operate it from anywhere in the world and advertise fake jobs to the job seekers here in the UK.
Yeah, and it is quite shocking, actually, that it was 1 in 10 job seekers before the pandemic and before lockdown started, and that's actually gone up 70%. So that's huge. And I do remember when I was job seeking many, many years ago after university, I actually inadvertently got done by a scam. So it can happen. It can happen to anyone. I ended up paying money for something that was not real, but I didn't know. And I was just trying to find work. And so it does happen, you know, literally to anybody. And what sort of things are you seeing happening now?
And to your point about it happening to anybody, I mean, you're right. We see an absolute mix from right through from people in very senior roles falling for scams that are very targeted towards them. We over the years, we've seen a rise in LinkedIn scams where people very cleverly create the perfect looking next step promotion for people, and really are very good at sort of fooling people and luring them in, all the way through to, you know, people in sort of entry level roles, including students looking for part-time work. So we do literally see sort of right across the spectrum. In terms of what's happening right now because of COVID, there's been a real rise in key worker scams.
Okay.
So fraudsters putting job adverts for nurses, for health workers earlier in lockdown, and teaching and tutoring staff and childcare staff more recently. That includes not just workers in institutions, but even private healthcare and private nannies and private childcare, as fraudsters recognise that people are trying to work and look after children. So we've seen a real targeted approach from fraudsters to the sorts of industries that they know have been desperate for staff during the pandemic. We even saw earlier in lockdown, you may remember the Pick for Britain campaign, which was a campaign launched by UK government to get people picking produce and farms. We even saw fraudsters creating fake farm labouring and farm picking jobs, called a variation of Pick for Britain, sort of .org rather than .org UK or whatever. Okay. So we've seen really tailored scams during COVID-19. That's sort of one half of it. The other half is we've just seen an increase in the general scams we were seeing previously, which are the scam directed towards more generic sort of job roles, people charging for police checks or uniforms or whatever they don't need. So we've seen a rise in what was happening before lockdown, and then we've also seen a huge rise in COVID-specific scams.
And in terms of the COVID-specific scams, I find those particularly shocking, especially the ones that are targeting key workers who we've all relied on thus far. And it's just abhorrent. And you know, I don't know how these people sleep at night, but I guess they're seizing the opportunity that's there, and it's absolutely disgusting, isn't it?
I think one of the problems with this type of scam as well is that it's so technology enabled that fraudsters can get away with it without ever having to meet a victim. They can They can hide behind a computer screen. They can get their fake adverts up onto sites. And other than perhaps responding once or twice by email, they can do it in such a way where they can almost keep themselves immune from sort of understanding, meeting, seeing the victims ever. And in a way that desensitizes it and makes it even easier, I think, for them to perpetrate this scam. I think it's, you know, in our modern world, it seems to be that crime is more and more online and tech enabled than sort of old fashioned face to face, where of course the other reason why it's so much more tech enabled is it's harder for people to get caught as well, so fraudsters can get away with it. So it's terrible, it's absolutely terrible. There's some of the stories we've heard about key workers, friends and families, etc., that have lost money through this.
Yeah, and tell us a bit about that then, because I mean, I'm guessing particularly the key workers end of the spectrum, these are people who are just doing their best for the country at the moment. And, you know, none of us can afford to lose money, but I guess some of these people are even less able to afford to lose money, assuming it is a financial loss to them.
We always say this, that you know, the amount of money that people lose through a job scam can be anything from £100 up to thousands of pounds. But we always remind people that it isn't always the amount of money that people lose, because sometimes the £100 is worse for people who are losing that than the ones that might lose thousands, because often it is the people that can least afford it. We've had all sorts of reports over the summer from friends, from parents, from relatives who were concerned that their sort of loved ones have got embroiled in a scam. We've equally got reports from job seekers who are saying that they think it's a scam and actually they've borrowed money. So the money they lost was money they borrowed from friends and family, and not only are they still without a job, but they've got to go back to those people that lent them the money to admit that they've lost it. So we've seen a lot of real financial hardship and a lot of personal stories behind these scams over the summer.
So that's a double hit for those people. Not only have they lost the money, but they also, I guess, feel embarrassed or ashamed or whatever to go back to the people that they borrowed the money from. I mean, that's awful, having to admit to being a scam, because people think, you know, you should be able to protect yourself against being scammed. But actually, as you said right at the start, it happens to the best of us. And what sorts of things is it? Is it people paying for kind of fake qualifications, which I think is something that's been an issue for a while, or is it just jobs that don't actually exist? What are you actually seeing?
So the main thing we see at the moment is what we call advance fee fraud, which is people paying money up front for something that doesn't exist. So in this case, the jobs don't exist, but to get through to that point, the job seeker has paid money on a number of things. Quite common at the moment is training. So for the key workers, they're told they need to pay to have some sort of training, which often is online. And occasionally there is training that they actually do. But what you find is the training they've done online is worth about £10 and they've paid £250. There's also, that's the training side. There's also qualifications and accreditations that you mentioned. So particularly busy scam lately has been CIPD qualification, people paying between sort of £260 and £300 for a CIPD accreditation that doesn't exist to get a job. We also see people paying for background checks, in particular police checks, so usually DBF. Fraudsters have gone to the lengths of even creating third-party DBS websites. So The fraudster offers the person a job and then points them to, you need a police check to start this job and we need to get it back really quickly because we're under so much pressure. We need you to start in our care home on Monday. Mm-hmm. By the way, here's a company that do fast police checks. And the worker goes onto that link and think, well, it must be true because this is some other company. But of course, it's all part of the same scam. So they're really common, that the sort of pay for services, whether it's training or police checks. But aside from advanced fee fraud, we also get identity theft. People are so used to having to provide bank details, passports, documentation as part of a job process. They assume that it's normal. So we've had people supply all their information about themselves and then later realise not only was there no job, but a car's been bought on finance in their name or a company's been set up in their name or sort of their identity's been compromised in other ways. So that's also quite common, unfortunately. And then recently we've even seen the return of an old one, which is the CV writing scam. So people being told that they seem perfect for a job, but their CV isn't quite good enough to get through the door. But actually, if they use this third-party CV writing company at £300, £400, £500, they're guaranteed to get an interview. And of course, the whole thing. So there really are a number of different types of scams.
So that's a huge variety. And actually, just coming to what the one you just talked about, the CV writing scam. Now, this is a really difficult one to navigate because there are genuine CV support writing companies out there. So how on earth can someone tell the difference?
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And I would add that for a lot of these scams, they are difficult to navigate your way around, because for every fake recruitment company asking for bank details and passports, there's all the legitimate ones asking for the same. You know, for every fake scam aimed at key workers saying they have to do training, there's all the genuine companies telling people they need to do training as well. So it is really difficult. So in terms of the CV one particularly, the sort of things we always advise people to watch for are, there's a difference between advice and mandatory. So what employment agencies, job boards, recruiters, etc. should not be doing is making it absolutely mandatory that you have to pay for a CV to be rewritten and then guaranteed to get the job. Everybody can advise work seekers that it might be worthwhile getting your CV updated, and that work seeker should be allowed to go and choose whoever they want to choose, pay what they want to pay if they want to rewrite their CV. What shouldn't be happening is where someone is saying that you must get your CV rewritten and you must use a particular CV writing service, and that all of that is mandatory to get the interview or even the job. So it's fine lines, and I would understand why a work seeker wouldn't necessarily know this, because it is fine lines. But that's where the distinction lies between what's a piece of advice and what's you must do this to get the interview or job.
Yeah, and it's really shocking, actually. And also bearing in mind, some of these people who are job searching now probably haven't planned on job searching and haven't actually been in the jobs market for some time. So it must be incredibly easy to get caught up by them. The one I wasn't expecting, actually, was the ID fraud. And I don't know why I wasn't expecting that, because it seems an obvious thing. But yeah, you're quite right. We do give a lot of our information out when we're job searching. And, you know, how can someone know whether they're giving their bank details to the appropriate person? Because you have to at some point in order to get paid, right?
And do you know what's even more difficult now for people is the fact that COVID-19 has made it all remote and digital. Yeah. In the old days, we used to say, at the final stage of getting the job, when you're going into either the recruitment company office or going into the employer's office, provide them the information then. But of course, all of that's changed, and people are working remotely and providing information digitally to all of the legitimate companies and recruiters as well. So this problem has become even harder to navigate, because even our previous advice now doesn't work because everybody's doing it remotely. So really what we've had to turn our advice into is saying to people that, you know, the sorts of checks you can do on companies first. If it's going for a job with a well-known established brand, check their corporate website and make sure they are hiring. Call them potentially to make sure they're hiring. If you've applied for a job and you've been moved through the process very quickly to job offer stage with very little in between, do think twice about it. Check out if it's a recruitment agency, check them out on Companies House, make sure they do exist. Although, of course, we all know setting up an agency on Companies House is not actually that difficult, but it is a step that people can take. The other things we talk about in terms of the actual job advert itself is what's very common is that fraudsters want the widest pool of applicants they can possibly get because it's all money for them. So what they'll often do is create a generic looking job specification that has very little requirements in terms of past skills, past experience, past qualifications, making it as easy as possible for people to apply. Sometimes the salaries seem a bit higher than you would normally think. So we ask people to, even at the very job advert and job application stage, really ask questions about the quality of the advert. How specific is it? Does it look too generic? Again, do the research around the companies. And at the point where you're going through the process, does it feel too fast? Does it feel like you're being offered the job too quickly? So all these stages, think about it. But what I would say, going back to comments we've both previously made, is that COVID-19 has made this so much harder for people. Because again, in the old days, we would say, make sure there's a face-to-face interview, or make sure you've had proper in-depth contact with the recruiter or the employer beforehand, whereas a lot of that isn't happening now, even in the legitimate recruitment scenarios.
And also it's very difficult for recruitment firms as well, because they are some of them must be overwhelmed with the number of applicants, and so actually they might not have the time to do it as in-depth as they might have pre-COVID. And of course, we are all doing stuff remotely. I really can't remember the last time I had a face-to-face meeting with anybody. It must be about 6 months or so in doing it in person. So I guess someone may not even know whether they've been scammed until day one of their apparent job about to start, which must just be awful for them.
That's right. We've had plenty of those where people, even after day one, we've had people come to us several weeks in to say they haven't been paid and they're concerned at what's going on. Some of cases we've even had where people have been doing work. They've been working from home, doing what was administrative tasks. So for example, when they were offered the job, they were asked to go and do some research online. So they've actually spent time doing what they thought was paid work. And then it's only weeks later, when there's been no salary, that they've started to wonder what's going on. So you're absolutely right. We've had people on day one only realizing then, but we've even had people in weeks 2, 3, 4 only realizing that it's not a genuine job.
Wow, and it's just awful, isn't it? I mean, what laws are there in place to stop this sort of thing happening? I understand that that kind of requiring people to pay for their own background checks, I'm fairly sure, is not supposed to happen. But you tell me, you're the expert.
So this is another complicated area, which is again why fraudsters do so well. So my first principle is that there aren't enough laws in place to prevent the actual fake job adverts in the first place. So we'll come on to recruitment later, but if you just look at job boards, platforms, apps, social networking sites, we get a lot of reports from Facebook, LinkedIn. This isn't just the sort of what you might think of the sort of core job boards. This is marketplaces, platforms, all sorts. So wherever these fake job adverts go, there's not nearly enough rules and responsibilities on those organisations to stop fake adverts hitting their sites. Yeah. There isn't even any obligation on them to really do much about it, even once they recognise they are fake, although most do. So firstly, there isn't enough regulation around what we would call online recruitment. So the laws in the UK really are designed for bricks and mortar traditional recruitment agencies and traditional recruitment models. And we talk a lot to government about how so much of recruitment now is not bricks and mortar traditional recruitment models. Yeah. It's direct engagement, it's intermediaries, it's apps, it's platforms, it's marketplaces. So firstly, there's not enough rules. Secondly, what laws there are need to be evolved to fit mm-hmm. what's now a modern labour market. And then thirdly, in terms of where recruitment agencies are part of this process, ironically, they're probably the most regulated out of everyone in this yeah. in this space, which outsiders I don't think would necessarily realise that. But with recruitment agencies, there are challenges. One is that there's no barrier to entry. So yeah. this afternoon, I could set up a recruitment agency and mm-hmm. get it on the company's house within a few days and be operating.
Yeah.
So it's very, very easy for the sort of poor players to come into the market. It's very difficult for government and the regulators to effectively regulate such a large sector. I mean, mm-hmm. clearly the numbers will be affected by COVID, but pre-COVID, they reckon there was 30,000 recruitment agencies operating in the UK. And so effectively regulating that is challenging.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the kind of requirements those recruitment agencies do have, you're absolutely right that a recruitment agency can't charge a fee for work finding services.
Right.
You define work finding services as, you know, paying for CVs, for training, etc. But these things aren't too difficult to get around. So you, like my examples previously about some of the scams, you could set up, you could encourage people to upskill themselves. You could encourage people to do their CV. And if you then happen to use a third party that wasn't a recruitment agency to perform that service, it suddenly becomes quite grey, which is why it's very hard for workers to. So, you know, I think whilst recruitment agencies are the most regulated within this whole field, you know, I think modernising the current regulations is important.
Yeah, it seems essential, actually. And I think some of the laws governing recruitment agencies were originally came in the 70s, although I might be wrong on that. And you just think how much the world has changed since then. And, you know, our current experience is very online and tech driven. So you're quite right. Do you know if the government will be looking at this? Because the government is so busy with all the obvious things. And I don't even want to mention the B word of Brexit, but it's there now. But yeah, do you see any light at the end of the tunnel for the regulations?
So government are looking at the regulations that relate to employment agencies, which is mm-hmm. which is great. But for all the reasons you've given, there isn't necessarily a set time frame on that due to obviously COVID and now. Brexit as well. So I think those things will delay it. But government has committed to review of those, which is good. And also the other point about COVID for UK government is that, you know, you could now that everything's remote and digital, mm-hmm. there's nothing to stop a recruitment company moving to a cheaper part of the world.
Yes.
And operating a platform in the UK to find people in the UK, jobs in the UK.
Yeah.
And if a recruitment company did that, they're outside of the scope of UK legislation.
Oh, gosh. So okay.
In one quick step, you could you could move yourself away from the UK regs. Now, partly for that reason and many others, you know, UK government obviously are keen to sort of evolve the legislation, because in the 1970s, the idea that a recruitment agency could operate in the Cayman Islands but work in the UK would have been daft.
It was just laughable, wasn't it? Yeah. And just on that, actually, in terms of all of the different apps and platforms and that side of things, one of the things you said earlier did surprise me a little bit in terms of, I guess, that it sounded to me like they're almost completely unregulated. So I could, the same way you might set up your recruitment agency this afternoon, I might set up a jobs platform, be entirely online. I'm not calling myself an agency, so I'm not in the agency regulations. The jobs I might advertise might be all fake. Who controls that? Would that be the Information Commissioner, advertising standards, or kind of where does that sit?
Sure. So firstly, I agree, and you could set up a platform. And again, back to that point about you don't even need to be in the UK. Mm-hmm. We could, and there's actually some well-known apps and job boards and platforms that are very deliberately not in the UK, even though okay. you would think they are, because they have a strong UK presence. So it's very easy to set up a platform or an app or a marketplace outside of the UK. In terms of whether you're a recruitment agency, of course, it's not about whether you call yourself one. It's about whether government deem the service you're providing to be in scope. But that's easy to avoid. So if you avoid performing as a recruitment agency, then you're not regulated by the UK government for that. And that really does leave exactly what you've said about the only recourse is advertising standards agency. But you know, they've taken very little action over the years on fake job adverts, because advertising standards agency are looking at advertisements full stop across every sector. So this is not a core sector for them. That is one recourse, but it's quite complicated, because for the advertising standards agency, it's about whether the person advertising the job knows it's not a real job. And of course, the complication with these job boards and apps and things is that a lot of the jobs on there aren't posted by that job board or by that app. They're posted by intermediaries, they're scraped. So actually, who are the ASA going after? Are they going after the job board, or are they going after the third party that's three steps removed? And then there's the ICO, but again, the ICO is really about data processing. So that's, they really would be more interested in how that job board is processing the applicant's data. And as long as they're doing that properly, their interest isn't specifically on whether the job advert the person's applied to is real or not. Yeah. I think the ICO would have things to say about CV harvesting, about using applicants' data for other reasons, but less to say about whether the job advert's real or not. So to summarize, I mean, really, if you wanted to set up a platform, a job board or an app and situate it outside the UK, aimed at the UK market, there's very little that could actually get you in terms of regulation.
And you would hope that the well-known jobs boards would have a moral duty to take action. I've no idea if they do or not, and you might not really want to be able to mention any names of them, but in your experience, do those well-known job boards have a moral duty to take action?
In my experience, they have a moral duty. Do they actually take action? I would say to greater or lesser degree. So there are ones out there that are very good, and they spend a lot of time trying to take things off their site in advance. They also work very well with Safer Jobs, and they report information to Safer Jobs. They take adverts down that Safer Jobs report to them, and you know, and I would say they do a lot. Then you have them right the way through to all the way to the other extreme end of the spectrum, which are the ones that do as little as humanly possible. They don't make any real efforts to keep fake adverts off their site. They don't really take action if workers complain about losing money or fake adverts, and they don't, and they do the bare minimum if Safer Jobs contact them as well. So unfortunately, we've got a whole range of behaviours, but in my mind, they all have a moral duty to protect their customer base.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it is positive that you do have those good relationships with some of them. And let's assume some of them are the main better known ones in the UK. It is part of the problem, though, that those job boards, and also kind of perhaps the wider general public, don't have as much awareness of the types of scams that you see, and also the impact that those have on people. Because I would like to think if my jobs board that I've set up was actually taking people's money from them and making them worse off, that's completely not why my platform would exist. Therefore, I would probably make changes. But if I'm not aware of that impact, then could I be forgiven for not taking action? I don't know. I'm probably being too kind to them. And, you know, what are your thoughts?
So I think job boards are aware of the problem. And how they behave, I think, stems from how they view the problem. So we have job boards that are concerned this is such a big problem that by saying anything and doing anything too much about it is like lifting Pandora's the lid of Pandora's box, and suddenly it becomes a big issue they can't control. So we have some that just want to keep it quiet because it's too big a problem for them. And yeah. we have others that actually are very open about it, and they do a lot of proactive messaging about job safety. They put money into trying to help and guide work seekers, and the way they respond to customers, you can tell, is different based on that philosophy. So again, the former group treat customers really quite poorly. The latter group, you know, do a lot to try and help customers who have become a victim. I mean, one interesting question we've always had is what about if platforms actually were responsible for compensating people for losses? That might drive different behaviours.
Yeah, I'm certain that would. I really like that idea. And I think I would like to think that those job boards that do take action then perhaps get a reputation within the recruitment industry for being ones that take action, therefore for being ones that you want to advertise with, because you know that they're a decent jobs board. But sometimes I think I might be in cloud cuckoo land with my ideology there. I don't know if that would ever happen in practice.
I think that's something that we share. So we would absolutely love to get to a place where that is the outcome, that the people who really are committed to doing the right thing, people who really take this seriously and look after their customers and work seekers, would eventually be the people that sort of win commercially. I mean, that's very much what Safer Jobs want to try and bring about. The work we do with government is always about, not that there is a problem with the sector, but there's actually a problem with the level playing field of the sector. And that actually we always want to promote, whether they're recruitment agencies, job boards, apps or whatever, we want to promote the ones that are doing great things, and we want to make life harder for the ones that aren't. And eventually what we would like is there's more awareness amongst job seekers about who Safer Jobs are. We'd like to get to a point where basically the job boards and recruiters that work with Safer Jobs are the ones that are trusted more by the public and basically by the paying sort of end clients and hirers. So that's what we'd like to bring about.
I know you've been doing a lot of work recently to raise awareness of the different types of scams that you see. And I know you've been doing some stuff with the BBC, you were on the radio, you were doing some filming last week as well. So hopefully the message is getting out there. But do you think there's more that maybe the government can do or other organisations? I mean, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you do?
So if I could wave a magic wand, I would want I'd want Safer Jobs to be almost synonymous with job seeking. Mm-hmm. So like other campaigns where whatever you might be doing in life, there's a sort of advisory group that everybody has heard of. And the reason I'd like that to be the case is that Safer Jobs provide free advice to all work seekers and workers in the flexible economy. Obviously, what happens a lot is that we get reports after someone's been scammed. Mm. What we'd like is more people coming to us before they've sent the money, so that we can actually advise them and then start preventing it. So we'd like, sort of, if you like, Safer Jobs synonymous with job searching. And to do that, we do call on government to put more out in terms of messaging. So whether that be through Find a Job and through DWP, or just through general advice and guidance, or even across DfE, across sort of education, is that, you know, the message is there that when you are looking for work in future, it is always worth, you know, checking with Safer Jobs. Mm. What some job boards have done, which is fantastic, is they've put Safer Jobs in every job advert. So every job advert on their site, the Safer Jobs logo appears. So again, part of this becoming synonymous with job seeking is we'd like every online job advert in future to have to carry the safe job searching message. And I do think government have got a role to play. Whilst they may not want to mandate things, they've got a role to play in encouraging that. And you know, for us, there's no reason why every platform, from Facebook to the job boards that you've mentioned to others, shouldn't ensure that the Safer Jobs message or logo is in every single job advert. And that way we feel then that you know, a bit like APTA's synonymous with booking holidays these days. You know, Safer Jobs becomes synonymous with looking for work, and that does several things. It means more people will ask questions before they're a victim, which is great. And we also think that increased intelligence and role that we play will put pressure on the private sector companies to make sure they're doing more, because they won't want to have to deal with us constantly because of loads of reports of scams.
Yes. No, you're quite right on that. And it is a hard one, isn't it, in terms of people being aware of the issues. And I guess general public wouldn't be aware of the issues until they're trying to find jobs, and then they might end up in this murky world. And I don't know, just while you were speaking then, I was wondering whether anything could be done in terms of schools and careers guidance and that sort of thing, and whether there's any traction to be had there. I mean, I don't know, I'm probably telling you how to do your job, which is inappropriate, but you tell me what kind of things is there any scope to work with them?
I think there is. I think we already work with Citizens Advice Bureau, who do a lot of educational work with schools and colleges around job searching, and they put us in that, which is fantastic. But there's always more to be done with the education sector. One of the challenges we find with the education sector is how broad and sort of fragmented it is. Mm. So, you know, trying to get messages out to every school or every college is actually incredibly difficult. Or even, I should say, not even getting a message to every school and college, but getting a message to every classroom is really difficult. So we have in the past worked with trade groups, associations that sort of look after groups of schools or colleges, but we've never found the sort of silver bullet, if you like, in terms of really getting that message into every sort of career service, into every school and college.
It's hugely difficult, because whilst you can do communications, it's whether people engage with those communications and take any notice of them, and you can't control that. And people say, oh, you know, there needs to be better awareness. Okay, great. Well, we can all communicate about stuff, but if nobody's listening, then you're not going to change the awareness levels. Difficult.
For us, I think our silver bullet really is getting to the point of mass where majority of job adverts themselves actually carry our message.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in terms of the recruitment sector's awareness of job scams, I mean, I've just come from working alongside the recruitment sector for the last sort of 7 years or so, and I hadn't really seen a huge amount of awareness in amongst the recruitment sort of trade press, but that might be my perceptions. It might not really been on my radar, so I might have been one of these people who you're communicating with and who's not kind of being receptive. But what's your perception of awareness within the recruitment sector?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The way to answer this, I think, is to say that we work with a number of recruitment agencies now, which is great. It's growing all the time. We have attacked it via the procurement route.
Okay. So
where there's joined up procurement, like for the NHS or for schools and colleges or for large organisations, we've asked that part of the procurement process is that agencies partner with Safer Jobs. Yeah. So interestingly, we always have more agencies that operate in certain sectors or with certain clients work with us, because it's a sort of carrot and stick, isn't it?
It's a really neat way of attacking it as well. If the agency's clients are requiring certain standards, then those agencies will deliver on those. Otherwise, they won't get paid at the end of the day. So
that's right. And obviously, it's free for recruitment agencies to work with us as well.
You're in a catch-22 where the companies that will engage and promote Safer Jobs are the ones that are doing a good job anyway. But I guess that does help in itself, because the temporary workforce is by nature temporary. So if they see Safer Jobs advert on recruitment company X, and then they get a job through recruitment company ABC that doesn't have Safer Jobs, one would hope that they might think, oh, why haven't they got Safer Jobs on their website?
That's absolutely our attitude. And the temporary work, the temporary agency workforce is peripatetic. They'll people who might today work for a company that partners with us and does the right thing, tomorrow might not, but they'll hopefully remember where they saw us. So our view is that we would rather partner with as many as possible because that gets the messages out to the workers. And I'm pleased to say we're partnering with some of the biggest recruitment agencies out there, which is fantastic. So the reach that gives us is huge. And as I say, all those workers who may then move to you know, less ethical recruiters, they'll hopefully remember there's a place to get free help and advice.
Yeah, and are there any kind of warning signs as to how to spot a good agency versus a possibly dubious agency?
Oh, that's a very good question. Difficult to answer. I mean there's obviously one thing I would say is information provided by the recruitment agency. The good ones generally are very upfront. They provide lots of information, from key information documents to contracts to terms, conditions to emails explaining whose role it is to do what. So we generally find the good ones will be very upfront and very open in their communication. Doesn't mean they don't ever make a mistake, but as I say, we're not looking at mistakes. We're looking at systemic problems. The less good agencies are the ones that will provide very little information, provide very little in writing, will almost hurry people through processes, will convince them to do things, and it all feels a bit like it's not very official. So again, it's slightly intangible. I wish I could give you an answer that was absolutely nailed on. But I think that's one of the big warning signs, actually, is you're dealing with somebody that's providing you with lots of helpful information and advice, or you're dealing with somebody that is just pushing you towards an end.
Yeah, it's almost like if it doesn't feel quite right, and you're spot on it. How do you describe that? But I guess as a job seeker, there are warning signs, and yeah, if they're pushing you through, or if you've just got doubts at the back of your mind, perhaps. I mean, if you do have doubts at the back of your mind, do you just ask directly and say, "I'm really sorry, I've heard there's lots of scams. I'm not saying you're a scammer, but what can you?" How do they get themselves that peace of mind?
Yeah, well, obviously they can ask any questions they want to ask direct with Safer Jobs. You do it fully online. Yeah. And you get a response within a day or so. So they can ask there. If they've got any concerns about the recruitment agency, they can report direct to the regulator in BEIS. There is a problem, in my view. There is a problem with underreporting in the sector. Okay. I think if more agency workers spoke out about the problems they were facing, I think it would level the playing field. I think the regulator would be able to focus their efforts on the less good operators, and it would be better overall for workers and the sector. So they can go there, but yes, they can also just check with the recruitment agency they're dealing with. Yeah. I mean, the other thing we would always advise is it's hard if the recruitment agency is the only one that's got that specific job that you want. But what we would normally advise is registering with a few agencies, and then at least you can compare. You don't have to go through the process with them all, but you can at least get a feeling for who's doing, you know, good things and who isn't.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And just finally then, what sort of actions would the regulator take if they had cause for concern? Because we haven't really touched on this, but it might just help people be more inclined to report if they think that there'll be some action taken.
So if I just step us back to the Safer Jobs action, and that leads into the regulator and other actions. So every report that goes into Safer Jobs, we provide free advice back to the worker. Yeah. If the report that we have got, we can see is either criminal, we will engage the police. Yeah. If it's about job boards or platforms not doing what they should, we will write to those platforms and ask them to correct the behaviour. We'll quite often involve the police in that. And 9 times out of 10, the organisation makes the changes. If we realise it's a regulatory infringement, we will either report direct to the regulator ourselves, or we will provide all the information for the worker to put the case into the regulator. So then, whether it's gone via us or direct from the worker into the regulator, what the regulator will do is obviously act on every single complaint they get. They will make contact with the recruitment agency. Where necessary, they will also perform inspections, which at the moment are obviously online, but previously would have been face-to-face. And then they have a number of powers to take action against that agency depending on what they found. And those powers include things like court orders, fairly significant fines against individuals controlling the agency. They can even ban directors from running agencies. So they have got a number of powers they can take, you know, fairly serious action.
Okay, and that's great. And I think they do produce an annual report as well. So if anyone listening wants to find out what action has been taken, I'm sure it's available on government website. But the thing that I think is important from what you've just said is not only are you in touch with the regulators, but you're in touch with the police as well. And I think that's that. And so by reporting things to Safer Jobs, then there is a possibility of criminal action being taken.
That's right. And we've had websites taken down, we've had prosecutions, we've got cases at the moment with the Metropolitan Police that they're building against people. We've had numerous cases with Trading Standards. We've got two ongoing at the moment that are going to court that are Trading Standards led. So there's lots of criminal and Trading Standard type activity ongoing as well. So it really is effective. And what I would say about reporting to Safer Jobs as well is that we're almost like a triaging in that we can tell whether it's a regulatory issue or not. So we can help both the regulator and the worker by saving time to make sure it's just the key reports that get in.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. Well, I think we've probably come to the end, unless there's any other kind of top tips or final words from you to our listeners.
You know, as a reminder to say, there's plenty of legitimate jobs out there, but do particularly right now when people are more desperate for work, do just suspend judgment when going through the process. Do ask questions. If it, as you said earlier, if it feels too good to be true, it probably is. And if you're just not sure and need help, you know, go to the Safe Jobs website and get free help.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really appreciate your time, because I know how busy you are, and our listeners from listening to our chat will also know how busy you are. So thank you from them as well. And have a good rest of your day, and perhaps we'll get you back at some point in the future as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. And thank you for raising awareness for us.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.